Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Crimelanders, thank you so much for joining me again on Crimeland. We are back with season 3, episode 1. We are starting it, kicking it off with a bang. I am so excited to tell you about the guest I have on today. Her name is Erin McGathy. She is just the queen of alternative comedy in Ireland. She is originally an American writer, director, comedian, funny person. She's just exceptional, an exceptional human being, so smart, so lovely. Just one of these people, when you meet her, you just want to be her best friend instantly. She is just so talented and brilliant. I am thrilled to have her on today. It's a great, great story as well. Just to say, I know a few people have gotten in touch with different topics. We are very much, I feel, kind of focusing on the historical true crime with more recent crime, but it's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's victimless crime, because is crime ever victimless? But I think for the more recent stuff I have coming up this season, I very much kind of moved away from anything I feel is just a bit too recent and could potentially be hurtful to, you know, maybe relatives that might listen in or friends or so of people involved. So I have kind of moved towards the victimless, more recent crime, but historically speaking, it is still very much kind of true crime centered, because I think when there's a bit of a distance there, it's just easier to talk about these things, isn't it? Like, as I said, more recent stuff, topics like the Peru 2, etc. Again, not saying it's completely victimless, but I feel it's always easier to talk about these things when there's a bit of distance there. So I have so many guests in the bag, so many episodes recorded for this season. I'm really excited to bring them to you. I've been working really hard now over the last few weeks just to bring you the best stories and the best guests. Part of that has involved, and I have been doing this for a while, I have been paying guests to come on Crimeland, because now, not, you know, not like a lot of money, but just to cover their costs, because I really think it's important that we, I guess, place a value on people's time. So because I have been paying guests to come on, I've also been paying studio fees, production fees, platform fees, of course, as well. It has meant that the last season I did end up spending a little bit of money on Crimeland. So it actually ended up costing me a bit of money. And as much as I love Crimeland, I love that you love Crimeland, I have had to start a Patreon just purely really to cover the costs of running Crimeland. I'm not looking to make any money here. I was even discussing, I mean, obviously it would be lovely to make money on it, but I was even discussing it now with Shane, the lovely Shane Dempsey of Collaborative Studios yesterday, which is the studio used to record a lot of the podcasts. And, you know, as I said to him, really, I enjoy doing the podcast so much. For me, if I'm just really, I guess, breaking even, that is enough for me. So that's why I've started the Patreon. It is just so, I guess, the podcast isn't costing me money per se. So if you do want to support, we have a tip jar where you can just, you know, whack, I think it's $2.50 is the suggested tip. if you want to throw that in for $3.50 a month, which I guess is really the cost of a coffee. You get an extra Crimeland episode every month, and you also get your Crimeland on a Tuesday rather than a Friday. So I think that's a nice little perk. Hopefully we might be able to do a couple of small live shows as well. I would absolutely love that. But again, I'm just going to base it on the response to the Patreon and take it from there. But I am very, very excited about this season coming. As I said, if you can't afford to support me on Patreon, I totally understand. There's a recession on the radio. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of bills going up for people. So it will not impact your listening of Crimeland, but I do just want to be, I guess, just kind of open about why I am starting the Patreon. That is basically why, just to cover my costs on it. As I said, you were in for such a treat with the show today. Just to say as well, the last episode in season two, I unpublished it. It was one I did with the lovely Fred. It's a grand episode. I'm not going to lie. It's fine. You know, wouldn't be one of my better ones, primarily because both Fred and I had some kind of, I was on antibiotics. Fred also got sympathy illness, which was very similar to mine, but I am kind of convinced that it was all almost something more viral because I was sick with it for a long time. And I ended up recording an intro. And when I listened back to the episode was up for a couple of weeks, but I just find it really hard to listen back to myself. That's why I've started to pay someone to edit the podcast, because I find it really hard listening back to myself. I'm sure that's not a great way to introduce your podcast, saying, I don't know how you do this, guys, because I can't listen to me. But I listened back to it, and the vibe, I would say the energy was very much like kind of shipping news kind of energy. Like in music terms, I would say the energy would be like up there. It would be Shea, Breathe Me. Do you remember that song? Be my friend. That was the energy I was bringing to the intro for the podcast. It was not on brand. So I just had to unpublish it because I said, Judy, seriously, like this is like, you're basically doing it. Like the intro sounded like I was coming to you live from my hospital bed. It was just the worst. The episode itself was grand, but like the intro, my God. So yes, I will whack it back up with the new intro. Or maybe we don't need an intro at all. We probably don't. I'm sure you skip the intro. I skip the intros. So do you know what? I'll whack it up minus an intro because I don't listen to the intros myself. Anyway, listen, I think you're really going to enjoy today's episode. Do check out Mob Theatre as well, Erin McGathy's theatre company. They run alternative comedy nights every Thursday in Wigwam. And as I said, she is the queen of alternative comedy. I am actually signing up for a course with them. This is not an ad. They do run courses, writing and improv. And I wanted to do the improv class many moons ago, pre-COVID. But obviously the arse kind of fell out of everything and I ended up not doing it. But I am definitely going to do, they have a screenwriting course, which I've heard phenomenal things about. So I'm definitely going to sign up to that. But basically what I'm saying is they're just an amazing organization. So if you're in Dublin or if you fancy doing some classes online within, you know, kind of, I guess, the genre of writing, comedy, whatever, do check them out. She is such a great guest. And I think you're really going to enjoy today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to Crimeland. And if you do want to support us on Patreon, you can check us out over there. No hassle if you can't. Absolutely no issue at all. And yeah, without further ado, here's your episode. Welcome to Crimeland. My name's Judy J, and this week I'm talking to the amazing
Erin McGathy
about the mysterious murders of the Galapagos. Erin, I don't know if you know anything about this one, because I didn't actually tell you I was doing this topic.
No, I think you said, I mean, not that I did any research at all. I did not, but
did I say another one?
We're doing a French person. Yeah. No, but I love the Galapagos.
I need to start jotting down. You told Erin it was about a French person. Okay, so not quite French, but still very interesting, Erin. I think you're going to love it. Cool. Will I dive right in?
Please do.
Okay. Thank you so much. So, the mysterious murders of the Galapagos Islands. This is like such an interesting one. I think you're going to love it. So, situated in the Pacific Ocean, some 1,000 kilometers from the South American continent, the Galapagos Islands are made up of 19 little islands. So, these islands and the surrounding marine reserve have been called like a unique living museum and showcase of evolution. Located at the confluence of three ocean currents, the Galapagos are a quote melting pot. I don't know who I'm quoting there, but I just put it in quotation marks for no reason other than just for the crack, Erin, of sure. marine species. So volcanic activity kind of, I guess, that's what formed these islands. So this is, before you start thinking, is this like a geological podcast? This is just a bit of background, Erin. I promise this is where you tell me you did geology in college and I'm very embarrassed, but this is just like a bit of context for the story. So this volcanic action and the extreme isolation of these islands led to the development of unusual animal life, such as the land iguana, the giant tortoise, and many types of finch that inspired a certain Charles Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection when he went off on a little visit in 1835.
He was on a cruise with his wife and they're like, we have a stop off in the Galapagos. Do you want to go to the gift shop?
He's like, you know, I might stay in my cabin reading. And his wife is like, come on. Apparently they've got really big turtles. And he's like, okay. By the way, this is when people get in touch and tell me that a turtle is different from a tortoise. But like, you can't convince me of that. I'm sorry. That's just a rumor.
But bless those people. If that was the biggest issue in their day, was listening to a podcast and needing to take the time to send the email.
Back in the 1930s, then, the reason I'm kind of banging on about the Galapagos is, I guess, it's to kind of give a paint a picture for us. So back in the 1930s, the Galapagos were mostly uninhabited and really just known, obviously, for Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution and all of that. And they definitely were not the tourist attraction that they are today. So now you'd hear people heading off to the Galapagos, and that quite clearly was not a thing back in the 1930s. So having read about these uninhabited lands, for Berlin doctor Friedrich Ritter and his lover and former patient, which, I mean, doesn't seem right, but look, this was the 1930s.
You gotta meet someone somehow.
Exactly. You know, they didn't have online. So you just went to your doctor and you're like, do you come here often?
That what kind of doctor thing. Was he? Was he a GP or?
He was a GP. So I think there's something even worse about getting off with your GP somehow.
I'd have less concern with a GP versus, you know, gynecological doctor.
Dodgy. But this guy, so he's basically like her GP. They start an affair and he was really into, like, he's mad for Nietzsche, which I always think is such a red flag in a man. You know, yeah. It just feels like a massive red flag. He was mad for Nietzsche and he decided that he was kind of the proponent of this. And Dory was quite his patient and lover, was quite happy to go along with it. He was really into this idea that let's go to these islands and live like this solitary life, a Robinson Crusoe type life.
Right. So, and really quick, like what made her like a lover? What made this an affair versus like a relationship? Was he in a relationship?
Oh yes. So they were both married. So they were kind of running off together. Yeah. Sorry. That's probably a pertinent piece of information. But yeah. So they were both married and they were kind of running off together. So this was somewhat illicit in the beginning. And they decided to leave behind the trappings of modern life and elope to the end of the world together. So the affair had kind of started because Friedrich kind of fancied himself as a bit of an intellectual, which I guess if you're a doctor to some degree, you probably are a bit of an intellectual. But he would have been big into like reading and books and, you know, I guess carving out this life where they wouldn't have to depend on anyone else and could be very self-sufficient. So he would have like given her a lot of books and stuff and really gotten her on board with this whole lifestyle.
Well, two things. I wonder if he got into Nietzsche just because they shared the first name. And then the second thing is there's nothing creepier than I'm assuming he was older than her.
Oh, good question. I don't know if he was that much older than her. Okay. I'm actually going to look that up.
The whole dynamic where where the man with degrees is giving the woman a bunch of books to read to like get her up to snuff for his own liking is always,
I know,
it's always a little gross. Like, here's your kit. I need you
It was a bit of that he was very much trying to almost educate her, which really gives you the ick. They went off, they decided to leave Berlin. And in order to fully commit to this life of isolation, Friedrich actually removed all of his teeth in a bid to avoid potential dental work, which I just think is a bit extreme.
A little bit. Was that extreme for then? I don't know a lot about the history of dentistry.
I feel it's
the same as like shaving your head before going on like a trip to Thailand for
I feel it probably would have still been quite extreme for then,
right.
But he did have a set of emergency dentures which he very rarely wore, so I guess he was like, look, I'll bring the
just
denture.
Was like gums, just pure gums,
just gummy Aaron, like, oh, imagine like if you were Dare, you've committed to this life of eloping, I've got the bag, we're ready to rock, and then you rock up to the GP surgery and there he is, gummy bear. He has removed his gummy own teeth bear. I mean, it's
and
just,
he did it himself. Wow.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of questions, but obviously at that stage the ticket's up and bought, so you'd have the questions. But you're like, I'm committed now. So the pair embarked on a 4-week journey from Berlin to South America, where they waited a month in Guayaquil, which I'm pronouncing perfectly, just so you know. Definitely not. But they then moved to, went on, and they were sailing to the island of Floriana. So when Friedrich and Dari landed on Floriana, the volcanic island proved unforgiving and harsh and subject to droughts and blistering heat. So I guess, you know, you hear deserted island and you kind of think something quite tropical and hospitable in a way, you know, very natural, like this really natural, forgiving habitat. But Floriana was not like that at all. Like it was definitely an island of extremes. Like it wasn't even necessarily as pretty as you would expect a desert island to be, but certainly like the climate and the landscape was harsh. And Floriana, so Dari and Friedrich, they carved out a home for themselves among these elements and, you know, were reasonably well equipped to do that. But the island itself, so over the centuries, it was an interesting place, Floriana, because pirates had used it as a hideout. Whalers would restock with food here. And bizarrely, there was even a post office on this island. So this was like kind of a post box where passing ships would leave stuff and they could collect stuff. And so it was kind of a bit of a meeting point for ships, even though there was nothing there. It was unusual in that way. So,
and he was just, because of Darwin's writings, he was like, let's go, because it still feels like an odd choice.
It
feels very specific, maybe not odd, but like, why there, like Tahiti? Or
I think it was kind of the whole end of the world mentality, that it really felt like that they were going as far away as possible. Like, I know what you mean. You would think
it's an off the grid thing.
Exactly. It was like really off the grid. And then obviously, you know, he was really into Darwin and all of that. But I think it was probably just that psychological thing of, wow, it really feels like we are going to the end of the world here. I'd imagine. But I don't know. That's a really good question.
Because usually people like go to a specific faraway place because someone has said like, it's great here.
I don't think he was really saying, oh yeah, this is like, I mean, I haven't read Darwin. Okay. Just to signpost that before anyone gets in touch. But I don't think it was really like a holiday brochure for come to Floriana on your hollybobs. Like it was very much about the big tortoise thingies, you know what I mean? That was kind of the focus.
It'd probably be the opposite, because like the fact that it was so isolated was what made it so interesting. Anyway, they go to Floriana. Maybe he even just like looked at a map and he was like, here's this place, and they're from Berlin, so they're like, maybe every place is going to be kind of like this but with rocks and turtles.
Yeah, and I think it probably was the thing as well that they really wanted to leave Berlin behind. So again, it was probably like just the globe was out. He spun it around and was like, this seems quite far away. This will do. This'll do.
Yeah.
And Dari said, come on, gummy bear. And off they went. So they were definitely seeking out like this kind of Adam and Eve, Robinson Crusoe like solitude. But ironically, this desire for solitude attracted the interest of passing researchers who photographed the couple and subsequently sent the pictures to media in Europe, Erin, who became fascinated by the pair. And so much so that suddenly letters Friedrich and Dari had sent their friends, they were set obviously writing to their friends and families, they were being published in papers as the interest in them intensified. So bizarrely, because they had this little weird post box, which in and of itself just sounds so creepy that there's just this post box and like stop and pick up the post, they could still maintain contact. And essentially their friends and family were then selling the letters to the media in Europe, which, I mean, seems a bit of an invasion of privacy, surely.
Yeah, it would be. But yeah, that's fascinating. I wonder if like any of that motivation is like, if your friend leaves her family behind, and if he leaves his family behind, maybe they don't feel like, not that it's cool, but like, I wonder, like, out of their friends would have been friends with their partners as well. Maybe I'm just like projecting too much into this.
No, but it's true. But I suppose they were a bit like, listen, you know, it was a bit kind of like smell you later from Dore and Friedrich. Mm. And they were like, well, you know, if you're going to say you're turning your backs on us, then maybe that would kind of affect the relationship a bit. But
the letters personal, or were they just like, it's crazy out here?
Well, I mean, I don't think, in terms of what I read from the letters, it seemed anything I read was very much like, okay, about how they were getting on and how they were kind of, I guess, carving a home for themselves in this really unforgiving landscape. Friedrich's letters, it seemed to be, which will not surprise us at all, Erin, it was a lot about like his philosophies and thoughts on how mankind had really kind of lost the run of themselves completely, and like had really kind of, I suppose, that mankind was going in the wrong direction. So it felt very didactic, the extracts I read from Friedrich's letters, whereas Dari was, bless her, very much concerned with, like, she was big into gardening, so she was trying to get the gardening off the ground. Like, she seemed less concerned with the macro and more concerned with the micro, whereas Friedrich was really thinking, I am Superman. Look at me. It was...
Was there any indication that like that Gummy Bear like wanted the letters published? Like he wanted a bigger...
Oh, good question. Yeah, do you know what? Maybe there was a bit... Well, I don't know, because he probably enjoyed the attention to an extent, but what he didn't like was what followed. So what followed was, because the media were a little bit obsessed with these two for a while, because they were being... I guess kind of advertised as this modern day Adam and Eve. Because of that attention, this German family, Heinz and Margaret, were these couple's names. I feel like that's all wrong grammatically, but you get where I'm going with it. Okay.
Yeah.
Heinz and Margaret Whitmer, they found this story fascinating, so much so that they set out for Floriano themselves. So the couple, along with Heinz's 12-year-old son, Harry, who I would imagine was less than impressed with this plan, set out for Floriano in 1932. So the Whitmers were... very much, they're kind of described as like a salt of the earth type family. They were friendly. Their personas really clashed with the Nietzsche-based philosophy and intellectualism of Friedrich and Dari to an extent, who was certainly considered to be friendlier than Friedrich, but also they were there because they wanted to live a really solitary life. They didn't want to deal with any other people. So the arrival of this German family was not something that Friedrich was happy with at all. He really was not impressed with this, because obviously they didn't own the island, but they certainly hadn't invited them along, which I guess it's going to be intense, like when people just rock up and you don't know them and you're kind of after going to the ends of the world to live this isolated life, and suddenly you have these three down the road. Like, I guess not that I'm team Friedrich, I'm not team Gummy Bear here, but like, I can understand why you would be irked.
Sure. Yeah. No, I could definitely see how he specifically would be, especially if he's like, I've found this isolated place and I'm the authority on this place. This is my zone. And then someone else comes up and is trying to like also do that, which is probably like what he, like from his point of view, what he saw. But the irony of saying like, oh, society's going to hell in a hen basket. You'd think that he'd want people to go there.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, I suppose.
I mean, not literally that, but it's just like, what do you want from people? Like, well, you're selling this place.
I know. And he's saying, because obviously they had a lot of photographs of them as well. So the people found the photographs interesting. And I know what you mean. It's kind of contradictory in a sense that he obviously was reasonably happy with the attention. If he's like, you know, somewhat involved with the media and he is allowing his photograph being taken and all of that. So you're kind of advertising the place. So ultimately, as you say, what do you expect when people then come?
Yeah, but I can also see like it being my greatest nightmare, just like a couple that felt like they knew you so well, just showing up to your house essentially and being like, now we are the whole population of this area and you have to know us.
You can see how things are going to go awry here, Erin. Like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So while the two couples, they weren't exactly buddy buddies, but they right. did share kind of a healthy respect for one another and they gave each other plenty of space. Life on Floriana was kind of a little more strained, but it was reasonably harmonious. Like there was no, you know, there was no real conflict or issue between the two families. So the neighbors largely avoided one another, living about an hour's walk from each other's home until the arrival of Eloise Verborn de Wagner Bosquet, a self-proclaimed baron.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Who had come to Floriana in 1933 with two male companions, Robert Philipson and Rudolph Lorenz. Now, this baroness was just, she sounds like the best crack ever. Like this woman was a modern woman with grandiose tales of her life back in Europe. She was regarded as stubborn, wild, confident. She landed on Floriana with kind of, I guess, a sense of entitlement. And in her eyes, the island was instantly hers. So she rocked up and her vibe was completely different to the vibe of the other islanders. So straight away, there was an issue because she was very much like, okay, this island is mine. I'm a baroness. People are like, how are you, baroness? She was like, it doesn't matter. I just am. Like that was
because then you could just lie to people. Like anyone could show up and be like, I'm a baroness. So it's like, what are you gonna do? Google it? Who are you gonna write? Who are you gonna ask?
Yeah. Exactly. All right, what are you gonna do? Write a letter and put in your post box? Is that what you're gonna do? Like there, nobody could verify this. So she was very confident in her sexuality, very open about the fact that she enjoyed, I guess you might call it like a polyamorous relationship with
both of the men her lovers.
Both her lovers, Robert and Rudolph, and she was cool. Also really fond for, like, she just sounds like a real character. She was also really fond of greeting passing ships in, I guess you would say, kind of revealing sheer outfits with a pistol on her hip. And she convinced, like, a lot of, I mean, she's amazing. Yeah. Well, a pistol, that's what we think. And she would convince a lot of ships to stop, so much so that actually a captain of one ship actually shot a black and white silent film where she was like the only real character in the film. Like, she was just a really charismatic, wow, interesting person. And she certainly drew a lot of interest from passing ships. And she was just like really vivacious, I guess.
Sure.
According to the documentary A Galapagos Affair, the Baroness was intent on building a hotel on the island, declaring herself Empress of Floriano, we're sending in Italia. Okay, hey. So Floriana, her bravado air of superiority obviously annoyed her neighbors as petty conflicts started to rise really frequently. At the same time, the Baroness had begun to favor Robert over Rudolph, who was said to have been mistreated and often beaten by Robert. And he would then go and seek refuge with the Whitmer family. So he spent a lot of time with Margaret and Hines, increasingly so. And the Baroness and Robert were becoming kind of more of a duo, so to speak. So the Baroness, when she arrived, I guess from the get-go, was kind of causing trouble because they very much wanted to keep the island to themselves. And she was like, I think we should open a hotel here. This is going to be great. So there was just a lot of conflict happening.
Right. And who actually owns the island? Which is a very naive question. Like, because if there's no... Did no one own the island? Was it claimed by any government?
If there's a
post office, there must have been.
I think it is owned. So Floriana, yes. I should have known this. So it was owned by Ecuador. So I'd imagine.
Right. But anyway, it was owned by someone. So it wasn't a matter of like just saying like, this is mine now. I claim this for Eleanor. Right.
We weren't doing like a Charles Haughey Blasket Islands in the 80s. Like that wasn't the vibe. So it was owned by Ecuador, but yeah, that actually is a really good question. I should have known that, but I didn't. So stop with your DMs. Stop the DMs immediately. Don't even type it. Don't even send it, listener.
I'm like, I'm veering to like the annoying area of like someone on a tour that's like, oh, you said that thing about the architecture, but what about...
Stop. I'm always living in fear of those. You know, I see the people doing the city tours and I'm like, I would be sweating. One question and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'd have to Google that. I just, my knowledge of things is so superficial.
Oh, sure. Me too. I mean, I think defensively, I would just be like, you're free to Google it after the tour.
Oh, that's a bit of information. I remember I never did German in school. And in one school I was in, the principal came to me one day and said, how would you feel about being a German teacher? And I was like, not very good. And he was like, well, you're a German teacher. And I have one class a week where I would have to press. My only job was to press play on a CD. It was their listening class. And then we would look at the marking scheme and we would look at the answers together. And so often this one girl in the class would be like, I'm pretty sure that's pronounced blah, blah, blah. And I would always like, there's like multiple people in their late 20s in this country who believe, I would say, well, you know, in Hamburg, it's a different dialect. So that's the German I have. So they fully believe that Hamburg has a different German, because that's what I would tell them. I'd be like, well, where I study German in Hamburg, that's how they pronounce it. Like, I just lost myself in this web of lies.
Well, you couldn't very well say like, well, students, I don't speak German. Like, this is, you've had it. You're experiencing a terrible education here.
You got me. I didn't even do German in school, guys. So speaking of German, on the 27th of March, 1934, the island of Floriana it was never buzzing, but this night in particular was very quiet and very eerie. Mm. A sense of foreboding, according to the writings of Daré, had settled over Floriana. Mm. So Daré would write in her diaries that she heard a long drawn scream and then complete silence, which of course wouldn't be unusual on the island, but just the scream itself was very disturbing. Obviously, says you, the Baroness and her lover, Robert, it would materialize, had disappeared. So here's where things get super interesting. So basically, They hear this scream and they're like, what's going on? And then the next day, the Baroness and Robert are nowhere to be found. The Widmers and Rudolph, who of course would have been the, I guess, how would you, maybe the discarded lover of the Baroness.
The ex-lover who now has to live with the Widmers because he can't go home. So now he's living with the neighbors.
Awkward.
And also Harry's there. And it's just...
Harry's there. Harry's always there. Harry's like, listen, I miss my friends. Like, this has been a bit of crack. I've enjoyed the iguana, but now I wouldn't mind like meeting some other teenagers. So they claim that the Baroness and Robert had come to them that morning and decided to go to Tahiti, which you weirdly mentioned, which is like, no, 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 no. So you got the script. Thank you so much, Erin, the script I sent on.
No problem. I forgot most of the lines, but I'm trying my best.
No, the improv is really good. Yeah, no, you're doing great. So they had come and said, you know what, we're going to go to Tahiti, and that they'd asked Hines and Margaret to watch their home and belongings should they return. So they were like, listen, we're going there for a while. We mightn't come back. We might come back. We're just going to go there like open tickets, see how we feel. Dare, on the other hand, recalls in her diaries that the Baroness, when she went to the house, she kind of had a look through, and she recalls that the Baroness's most prized possessions had tellingly been left at her house, while no sighting of an approaching ship had caught her or Friedrich's attention. So in other words, they would have been hitching a ride on one of these passing ships. They don't recall seeing a ship, and also her possessions were in the house. So straight away, Dari's like, this is a little bit dodgy. There's just a lot of questions here. The Baroness and Robert were never heard from again, and her larger-than-life personality and charismatic presence was forever lost to the island of Floriana. Suspiciously, Rudolph became eager to go back to Germany after the disappearance and soon made haste to the island of San Cristobal, where his boat disappeared en route, only to be discovered months later with his remains on Marchena Island. So the weird thing about the discovery of his remains, Erin, aside from the fact now all three of these people have been lost, nobody knows what has happened to them, they've just disappeared. This man's body is found, but his body was found on this island and it had been mummified.
Oh.
So that's bizarre.
Like embalmed. And embalmed. You're talking, this is Frederick, right?
This is the ex-lover. So the ex-lover.
Oh, right, of course. Sorry.
He made a hasty getaway. Yes. And he then went off to this other place, San Cristobal. So his boat apparently disappeared en route. Well, it did disappear en route. The captain of the ship itself, it wasn't actually a cargo ship, it was a fishing boat. His body had also been mummified by the sun. So essentially it was a shipwreck situation, but both men on board died and his body was found as well, the captain of the ship. So Rudolph at this stage is deceased. Robert and the Baroness have disappeared apparently to Tahiti, but Dari has a lot of questions about that. But ultimately the Widmers are not Widmers. I feel like we should pronounce it Widmers. The Widmers are not talking. So at this point, we kind of have a lot of question marks over what's going on. But now things get even stranger. A few months later, Dare calls to the Widmers and asks them to come to their house because Friedrich has taken ill after eating what she keeps describing as sour chicken.
Oh, no.
Which I feel like those two words should never go together. But anyway.
No, that's really gross. Okay.
Claiming to have eaten as much of the rotten bird as her partner, the Widmers remarked on the strangeness of Dari waiting until Friedrich was beyond saving before calling for help. So they were about an hour away from each other. But by the time they rock up to this house, like the Widmers, Hines and Margaret, who themselves are pretty questionable because, of course, they have said, you know, oh yeah, well, we were talking to the Baroness and Robert and they were really like, we really want to go to Tahiti. But then nobody kind of, so many question marks because like they didn't make Tahiti. Like maybe they did go to Tahiti. And then we happened to
help our friend get away.
It's just a lot of, you know, a lot of question marks. But Dari herself claims anyway, look, she goes to the house, says, look, he's really sick. They go to the house and Dari retells the death of Friedrich with loving detail, how it was a really sad event. But the Wittmers claim his dying words were to curse Dari's very existence. So again, bit of, you know, bit of discrepancy there in terms of the demise of Friedrich. Now, there's kind of a few theories as to what might have happened on the island. So
yeah, what I feel like that? I know. Let's see.
And now I'm going to ask Erin what happened. Okay, what do you think? What do you think happened?
Well, I think that, I mean, I'm going back to like the original origin story of Frederick and Dare and him giving her all those books, him being her doctor, and him being like, you know, I'm not a psychologist, it's rude to diagnose people we don't know, but also with the distance of time, it feels more okay.
Oh, so, for sure.
Like, I think he was a horrible, abusive narcissist.
Very narcissistic. Scoops her up,
goes to the island, and then she's in a horrific situation alone with this horrible man is what I'm seeing. And I'm assuming that like the relationship was so abusive and terrible. I think that and again, just doing this for the fun of the podcast is not like how I live my life, just assuming facts about other people. But what was the name? So it's Eleanor and who's the partner that disappeared originally?
Oh,
Robert.
Yes, the Baroness and Robert disappeared. Yeah.
And then the guy who was mummified, his name was
Rudolph.
So I think Rudolph got really drunk one night with the Wittmores, and like he did most nights, was kind of like cursing their existence. And just he got real wound up, and they told him to go take a walk, and he took a walk straight to their house, killed them, came back, and because they, you know, cared about him, were like, well, you gotta get out of here.
He was sharing a bunk with Harry.
Yeah, what? Yeah. So he comes back and they're also like, okay, this guy's a murderer now. And they're just like, you need to get out of here. You need to just, you have to leave. We'll cover for you. So they cover for him. He leaves. He dies on the rocks with the ship captain in this small boat. And then coincidentally, Dare with Frederick, I think that she's like waiting for him to die. She's like hoping for his death because she's in a miserable situation that she can't get out of. And he gets really sick one night. She like, I think like with the chicken, whether it was on purpose or not, I'm assuming not, but he gets so sick that she waits till he's definitely going to be dead and then calls over to the Wittmores. And
yeah.
I think she didn't kill him, but like also didn't help. That is my theory. That's my detective
interesting.
Theory.
Interesting. So you don't think she did like actively kill him, but she didn't stop him dying either, kind of thing?
She may have. I also think there's not like a huge difference between those two things, just personally. I know, like, I know in the eyes of the law there is, but for myself, I think like if I was to do one or the other, it would be kind of a similar thing.
I think that is, I think honestly, that is such an interesting take on an Erin. Like, because I guess, I mean, ultimately none of us really know. Like, there are a few theories as to what might have happened. Like, one, of course, is that Rudolph and the Wittmers together had murdered the Baroness and Robert. But I think based on what,
would their motivation be?
Exactly.
Really?
You know, I think the way you've described it is much more believable that, like, Rudolph killed them and ultimately they felt a level maybe a bit protective towards him, and they just said, listen, you have to get out of here, and covered for him. Maybe Friedrich and Dari were equally involved, like that could have been, you know, that could have been in a part of it as well, because of course the Baroness was really adamant about building this hotel, which Friedrich was dead against, like really did not want the hotel happening at all.
We have to remember they're on this island alone and have, I mean, my only
How
experience
creepy.
With this kind of, I mean, I used to work at a summer camp and it's a totally different thing, obviously, but anytime you get like a group of people alone without any outside influence, you immediately forget kind of the rules of the outside world. Not that everything turns for into sure. Lord of the Flies, but like you can easily justify things based on your own little community.
That is so true. That like it kind of does. Yeah, actually, that's so interesting because it is that kind of classic psychological experiment where you place people in this kind of really isolated location and ultimately there's a breakdown of, as you say, like general rules, ways of being, like levels of decency. Suddenly it all goes out the window.
And but we also, we know like historically from like situations where stuff like this has actually happened is that what people tend to do is actually take care of each other versus destroy each other.
I thought it was the opposite.
No, people. Yeah. I cannot remember the name of this country where this happened, but there were a group of boys in Africa in the 70s or 80s that were shipwrecked. And it was just a big group of teenage boys. I want to say like 20 to 50. I don't know. Heard about it once, but it's a very famous case where they were deserted for like a full year. And when they found them, they were guessing that they had, you know, killed each other or something horrible had happened, but they had actually, you know, survived, helped each other and stuff.
This is just fascinating, Erin. How did I not hear about this story before?
I only heard about it recently. I think it's like more, like obviously more famous in Africa, but,
they actually worked together. It was like a complete opposite Lord of the Flies situation.
Yes, exactly. Wow. Well, it was part of something. It was some BBC podcast I was listening to, and like it was part of a whole thing that was talking about. They were actually talking about like reality television, and they were talking about how like our human instinct, you know, barring sociopaths and psychopaths,
is to be kind.
Yeah. So my guess would be that like it, but that said, with that small group of people, if this was like a conspiracy to get rid of the two of them, I feel like that would be more likely to happen in this situation versus, you know, in the middle of Berlin. But also, it feels unlikely to me that it was a conspiracy and more likely that Rudolph went off on his own.
Like, I mean, generally, the most obvious explanation is the explanation. Like, you can, I mean, not that I'm saying you can understand how Rudolph ended up killing them, but he certainly had more motive, I would imagine, than like the Wittmers were just, you know, they were kind of like a regular family as such.
And what is there to do on the island except drink and get really mad about your ex-girlfriend and your ex, like, co-partner and them like fucking you up? I mean, imagine you're alone on an island bunking with a 12-year-old boy and you're like, fuck it.
you are gonna get a bit obsessive about it because, as you say, like you'd be going a bit mad on this island, you know. That's gonna be the only focus for all your emotions, because essentially the Baroness was the only reason he was there as such as well. And like the thing, you know, obviously then another theory would be like, it is possible Dari had killed Friedrich out of spite for his treatment of her, which was notorious. Like, as you say, he was very much not to be diagnosing people post-mortem, but there is a bit of historical distance here, like that we can, I think, safely say that he was a bit of a narcissist. He was a difficult man by all accounts. Like, he initially forbade Dari to plant flowers in their garden because he felt that this would just be a vanity project for Dari, you know, that it would be much better if she maybe, you know, grew vegetables or something that.
And she's like, blown up her whole life, so she would feel very.
Just send her have a couple of sweet peas. I mean, for God's sake. And then when she was, you know, she did plant the flowers and he kind of loosened up a bit. Interestingly, the Wittmers had a son and a daughter then on the island, and the birth of their son, their first son, Ralph, actually was kind of almost a bit of a not necessarily that they came together as an island, but apparently Friedrich kind of softened a little bit with the arrival of this like new baby on the island. And he essentially kind of, I don't want to use the term like let Dari have her garden, but didn't necessarily kick up much of a fuss about it. But then later on, he apparently threw back in her face that she was pouring all her love and attention into the garden a couple of years later and was like, you know, that love and attention should be focused on me. So again,
yeah, I mean,
that
sounds like classic emotional abusive.
I mean, when someone's jealous of your garden, Erin, that's just like, it's not a good look. It is not a good look.
And if we know that, if we know that to be true, there are numerous things that we
That's just one example. And that was something that Margaret Whitmer, because she would later go on and write a book. She talked about that, how in one argument he kind of threw that back at her. As you say,
in
that is just going to be one of many
things.
So he was certainly a difficult, stubborn man and generally the instigator of arguments with their neighbours. And thus many questioned whether Friedrich alone had perhaps been responsible for the murders of the Baroness and Roberts, setting into motion a pattern of events that would lead to his own demise. But then a lot of people have the question of Rudolph wanting to get off the island as quickly as possible. But then some people said, well, maybe he felt that he would be next kind of thing, because he didn't have, I guess, the protection of a family unit as such on the island. He felt a bit more vulnerable. But I think most people would suggest that perhaps, because he certainly had like a lot of motivation, that he did have some active part to play in the demise of the Baroness and Robert. But ultimately, we'll never know. As for the Whitmer family, their stay on Floriana as outlasted their ill-fated neighbours as they continued to live and die in the Galapagos, even opening a hotel on Floriana that remains open to this day, Erin.
Interesting.
And that is the story of the mysterious murders of the Galapagos.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. And there's video footage of these people and photographs.
There's
and
video
stuff.
Footage. There's photographs. Wow. There's a great documentary. And there is also a really good movie called The Galapagos Affair, starring Diane Kruger.
Oh.
Mm. So if you fancy checking that out. And there will be, just so you know, like, that movie is not as well researched as the podcast. So there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some differences there. But like, you know, it's just sad that people can't take the time and get stuff right, Erin.
I know. It's like, why speak on a microphone unless you know every little detail?
If you're going to do it, just do it. Okay. Erin, you have been such a joy. It's just been such a pleasure to have you on. If we're looking for you, where can we find you?
Well, I'm a co-founder of Mob Theatre Dublin, which is please edit out my laughing and weird stutteriness, but it is alternative comedy theater in Dublin. I was about to say it's the first alternative comedy theater in Ireland, which I believe to be true, but I get annoyed when people.
It has to be. Yeah.
So we do improv and sketch and all those things. We have shows every Thursday, and we also teach improv classes and writing classes, and that's mobtheatre.ie. And then I'm at Erin McGathy on everything.
Erin, you were so brilliant. And as I said to you at the top, I'm going to do a very gushy intro for you after the fact.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm fascinated by the story. I am going to get off and immediately get off. I'm going to immediately
start
get off to the
gummy
fact.
Bear.
Because he sounded so hot and I just need to.
I know. He was a bit of a looker, bless him. Erin, thank you so much. And it's just been such a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.